Welcome to this APTA podcast, bringing you coverage of the 2017 NEXT Conference and Exposition in Boston, Massachusetts. During NEXT, we conducted multiple interviews with conference lecturers and association leaders, which we broadcast live via Facebook. You can watch those videos at apta.org/next/news, or you can listen to podcast versions like this one, which are available via iTunes or at apta.org/podcasts. We're here in Boston, Massachusetts for NEXT 2017. I'm joined by Tara Jo Manal, who just completed the 22nd John H.P. Maley Lecture. So before we go any further, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Strike While the Iron Was Hot is Hot was the title, but it was really all about unwarranted variation in practice. And You started with a story of when you first entered the physical therapy field, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, I believe, and
it was
One Bum Knee Meets Five PTs. And basically the idea is this person has one knee problem, sees five PTs, and gets basically a different analysis, a different treatment all across the board. Starting with the obvious, unwarranted variation when someone doesn't get better is clearly problematic, right?
That's
a no-brainer. But whenever this topic seems to come up, the resistance seems to be like, but if my ultimate end is the patient is better, what does it matter, right? So you referenced that even today, we still have unwarranted variation in practice, and it's not just country to country or state to state. It could be PT to PT in a single clinic.
That's right.
And so I say that all as lead up to this of why is that such a big problem?
I think one of the reasons it's still a problem today is that we really don't have great resources where someone can go on a regular basis and check their practice. So what I mean by check your practice is what would be the recommended course of action for that particular condition for a particular patient, and where do I go to see if I'm on point or off point. The other thing is that it's seriously time consuming to go into the literature. Let's say we pick a condition, a simple condition. Let's just take ACL reconstruction. Most people will say they have great ACL reconstruction outcomes, but actually the studies are coming out that only about 65% of patients after ACL reconstruction go back to sport. When you talk to the patient about having surgery, did you say you only have a 65% chance of going back to sport? No, it's 100%, you're gonna be 100% recovered. But it turns out when you actually measure it, that's not what happens. So I think one of our challenges is our ability to measure is hampered because it ends at the discharge. So we don't actually know what happens long term. That's where we have to go to literature to find out the answers and then compare. Well, that's a big job to get all that data, that literature synthesized, and to even give me a benchmark to look and see how well I'm doing is difficult. Make it more difficult that I don't use that same outcome measure that they use. So I know that my patient did well, they did better than when they came in, but I can't tell if they did as well as the research would suggest they could do because I don't even use that measure. So we haven't gotten to a point yet where we've embraced standardization so that it can help inform us. Instead, it seems like asking me to do one more thing. And I think if we can create a better location where resources exist, we can start using those measures from the beginning, and then it doesn't actually make more work for us. And I think that the other important point is this idea of unwarranted variation. Unwarranted variation doesn't mean we have to be the same. It means that if we are variable, that the variations we have don't actually impact those outcomes. So you and I could rehab somebody very differently, but we get to the same point with the same cost, same investment of resources, then that's not unwarranted variation. We're at the same place. We are the same. It's unwarranted when it's outside of what that standard would be.
And so, you know, you talk about the standard and everything along those lines, and yet at the same time, it's so hard to imagine different approaches really, if you really get down to it, all coming out with the same outcome. So for example, you know, to a patient, one less appointment is a lot.
That's
right. To cost, and you talked about, you know, where another driver for this is not just patient expectations, but as we move toward pay for performance, this is more important than ever, right? Explain why.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the keys is that we have to do more with less, period. There's not another option coming here. And so how do we get to the best outcomes with the least amount of intervention that we can do? That has not been our model. Our model has been enhanced by more services and more services because that's more reimbursement. That is not going to happen in the future. That's not a debate. It's not going to happen. So what we have to figure out is how do we do our best for the least amount of interventions that we need. And for me, as a clinician, the thing that's even more important about that is that it's conservation of resources. There's only so much to go around. So if I have patients who literally I could check monthly, and they could do 90% of what they're doing on their own, and then I have a patient that has multiple comorbidities, and they need all my resources, they need to come daily maybe, I want to be able to do that with match to them so that they get what they need. The other person can be pushed out and be more independent because they're capable. Standardizing by screening people can even help tell you who could do that. So it still comes back to best practice and least cost.
So, you know, you mentioned here and in the lecture, obviously, the need to do this systematically and all the challenges that go with that. But there's also an individual hurdle, right? A sort of personal hurdle. And you asked a great question at one point. You sort of said, like, if I told you, think about your most complex patient recently, and if I told you I basically sort of had the guidebook on how you fix that person, who would want that? And of course, everybody wants
they
that.
They did. They all raised their hands. They
right. But then still generally when people feel that they're, you know, when clinicians feel that how they're treating is being prescribed as a general rule, there's resistance. And is that just human nature? What is that?
I think it may be human nature. I also think sometimes we're not the best self-assessors. You know, I look at something and I might say to myself, I do that. I actually believe I do that. But then we do chart reviews, and someone brings me my chart review, and they're like, you missed three. I'm like, I missed three? Three? That to me is like shocking. I would say I always do it. So I think one of our challenges is that we don't really build in the culture of measuring ourselves and holding ourselves accountable. It's just a little bit foreign. So when it sounds like someone else is doing that, that's blasphemy, right? I mean, you're going to hold me accountable? I mean, we have to start with holding ourselves accountable. And I am always shocked when something is checked and it turns out I'm not doing what I thought I was doing. And I'm immediately sorry, really sorry, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to do it the next time. And I'm most comfortable there because it's happened so many times. It wasn't feeling so good the first time. I might have even defended. I might have been defensive. I might have said, you're picking on me, or you're not looking at everybody else the same. I might have really had those feelings. I might not have said them out loud, but I had them. You do it 50 times, I'm like, oh, I can do better. Like, I just look at it now as, tell me how to be better.
Yeah, and there are two facets of that, of realizing you're not doing what you thought you were doing, right? One, you provided a great example with depression screening, basically.
That's
and
right.
You sort of said that when, as individuals, we look at someone, PTs, look at someone and decide if there's depression there, we're far less successful than when we use a tool to give us
That's
the outcome.
Right.
And you mentioned how this is not only a disservice to the patient, but it's actually a disservice to your outcomes, because the evidence suggests that if they're depressed, your outcomes are less likely to succeed. So there's that sort of this idea of using a tool is better than using your naked eye. But then the other facet of that is just sort of getting comfortable, as you said, with making sure you're actually even doing all the steps. And I say all that to get to this, you know, I thought numerous times as you're giving your lecture about Atul Gawande's The Checklist Manifesto. So first of all, how many times have you read that? Tell me it's at least once, right? Not a single time.
No,
okay. So it's a perfect parallel. Because if you've read it, you know, he obviously goes through several scenarios, but the whole idea is, you know, they've developed checklists for all these things, whether it's flight or things like surgery, and so many of the things are the basic things, those basic things that you think no one will ever forget this, and by putting them down, they're seeing the results.
That's right.
So I want to go to one example that you provided. First of all, just to quote one thing that I wrote down, you know, you said, not choosing to standardize to basically best practices is a conscious decision to accept lower outcomes. And you at one point told a story about what they did at Intermountain Healthcare in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And so take me through that in terms of what they thought they were doing really well.
Yeah.
And then how they learned that actually no.
So, you know, I applaud them. I applaud them for their openness and the fact that they're actually open about what their outcomes really are. They started looking at outcomes, and they were just using self-reported questionnaires. In this particular case, it was total knee, but they've done it in shoulder. They've done it in low back. They're working on knee right now, patellofemoral. But they, at this time, we'll pick total knee. So they looked at a knee outcome survey and said, look, if we're doing anything right, then at least it should be a minimally clinical difference, important clinical difference, between when they came into therapy and when they were discharged, like, or when they left because they weren't happy. Mm-hmm. And they included them too, which is very important. But we should at least be making somebody better, just better enough to say they're better, not even great. And so they measured when they failed to progress. They didn't make the person better in the time they had with them. And they found out their rate was around 20 to 23%. Nobody else knows what their rate is. Nobody is measuring this. So they not only found that, do you think a quarter of your patients aren't getting better in your care? Who would say that? So they were shocked. And they thought, well, we can certainly do better. So I think they talked about it. I do think they tried to put some things in place, but they didn't take it as a wholesale shift in practice. It was advice giving, it was recommendations to clinics. And when he called and said, you know, can we use your protocol? I said, it's already public on the web, help yourself. And he said, we can't make our mark. We've been trying for 2 years. And I said, okay, then the therapists don't know why it's important and don't know, they need help. They're not getting it. And that's not a criticism, that's just a fact. In 2 years, you should be able to get there. So we had a continuing education course, and we practiced doing it for real, on real people. We took measurements. We did everything that was already in their practice to some degree. We just standardized the way we did everything, and we did it as a big team. It was a huge lab, all the therapists. It was busy couple days, and in 3 months they hit the mark that they had set for themselves at 17% failure to progress in 3 months, and they've been trying for 2 years. So it really was a shift of the whole team to say, we are going to make a change. And in my opinion, team is the way to do it. An individual in a facility starts to feel like they're swimming upstream, although they should do it just because it's the right thing to do. But when you set a team up, then you help each other. You encourage each other. When I'm not sure what, I forgot what was told to me to do this, I can run over and say, I forgot, what am I supposed to do? Oh, right. Like, a team is the way to go. And they did all their centers simultaneously.
So that's the systematic change you're talking about.
That's
first,
right.
Within a clinic, but obviously we'd want that long term. But let's go back to just before we started this interview, you sat down and you know, sort of breathing a sigh of relief of having this done, because it's been a few minutes now.
Yeah.
And sort of said, like, you know, I hope there are a couple people that walk away and really change something. So on that note, on the individual level, for somebody that was sitting there or is just watching this right now, you know, in this daunting task of standardization or daunting task of bringing it to their clinic and standardizing, What's your advice? What's your takeaway? What do you want them to do, at least as step one?
Yeah. So one of the things I said near the end of the talk was, you know, it's a ladder, right? Some people are way up here, and they probably have resources that help them be there. So let's be realistic. This takes resources on a typical day. But you can start on the first rung. And the first rung simply might say, am I in alignment with guidelines that are available in the conditions I treat on a regular and ongoing basis? And just check that. Pull up the guidelines. Do you do those tests and measures that they recommend, or are you doing totally different tests and measures? Are you looking at what measures at systematic time periods to see if the patient's actually progressing? And when they aren't progressing, do you actually stop what you're doing and do something different because they're not getting better? Or do you just keep doing the same things that you're doing even in the face of failure to progress, or they're not changing? That would be a great, you know, change. That would be a wonderful thing to do, even at step one. And then every step after that gets easier. Once you start getting used to systemizing things, it's really easy to do. And in fact, the part for me, which I think is why I love this so much, is the thought of not being standardized terrifies me. Right now, when I go back on Monday, I could be covering somebody, and last minute they substitute a patient with acute stroke in place of the patient with a shoulder tendonitis that I thought I was seeing. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to start sweating. I cannot do a post-op, a new acute stroke eval in my clinic myself right now. Not at best practice. I can get through some random chaos, but that is not best practice. I would call up one of my neurotherapists and say, tell me what to do. Give me the key things I need to measure and the key things I need to look out for to make sure that I can treat them and they're safe and sound. And then I'll read up on it like later, but like they're coming in 2 hours. To me, that's standardization. It's a gift. It's gonna get me to where I need to be so that then I can be sure that person's getting best practice. It shouldn't be their fault that I'm me and I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, you said basically the standardization is like this specialist that's sitting there on your shoulder helping you out, and I think that's a great takeaway thought on it. We're going to be doing more broadcasts like this. We've got another one actually coming up here in just a few moments. If you're liking these broadcasts or next, do us a favor, give us some likes, give us some shares, let us know this is content that you appreciate, and we'll continue doing it. We'll also be back later in today to do a breakdown of the Oxford debate, which is always pretty exciting. And we'll be doing some broadcasts on the Student Assembly site as well and continuing those. So catch us later on Facebook. Check out the other posts we've done thus far. I'm Jason Bellamy, and I'll see you later.
For more podcasts like this one, go to apta.org/podcasts or search APTA Podcasts on iTunes. Don't forget to mark your calendar for Next 2018 in Orlando, Florida, June 27th through 30th.